like to echo thanks to Professor Gilbert for his thoughtful, balanced and clear overview. Our second presentation is bringing an industry perspective to the afternoon. We have Mr. Simon Holloway, the practice leader for Bloor Research. He joined them in 2007 as their senior analyst responsible for RFID, BPM and manufacturing. He's written a number of white papers on RFID, two technical reports on the market, as well as producing a number of product evaluations and articles. As of April this year, he has become practice leader for RFID, BPM and manufacturing. His topic for us today is making your life easier with RFID.
Thank you very much, Rachel. Unfortunately, Nigel's stolen one part of my presentation, so I'll just have to watch that one out as I go through.
Sorry.
Oh, it's all right, it's fine.
I didn't manage to survey your presentation beforehand.
I'm going to skip a few things. The first thing is, how many of you here have got your car keys? Take your car keys out. Right. Have they got a button? They've got a button, haven't they? You're every day using RFID. And what's clever about this thing is that when it uses it, it actually changes the code every time and then puts the new code back in here so that you then match up again. The idea about that is to make this absolutely secure in terms of anyone trying to intercept and trying to make use of it and trying to get into your car using the electronic key. So this is an RFID use, which most people are using every day, and which is now becoming standard car usage. Of course, if you're a Renault car driver, then you walk around with a big plastic card, which you don't even have to wave or press anything to, it just automatically opens up when you're near to the car. That's again a use of RFID. The piece that was used before was the Oyster card. The Oyster card is an RFID card. It happens to use a very, very low frequency, which is why you have to go very near to the yellow blob on the side, but it's actually using RFID to actually make the exchange of information to know when you're travelling. Okay? So that's another thing. How many of you got Oyster cards? Right. How many of you here have got the new library cards from the boroughs in which you live in that are actually RFID cards as well? Anyone got a yes? How many of you have got a sports club or a local sports centre card which has got RFID, which allows you to go in and out of turnstiles? There is a local government initiative in the UK which is actually making them all move their libraries and all of those sorts of facilities to use smart card technology. So there's a wholesome example of everyday usage of RFID that people are not probably aware of. What's even a little bit more frightening about this technology is just how old it is. It actually came out of the research that was done during the Second World War on radar. And it was all about being able to identify whether or not the aircraft that was seen on the radar screen was friendly or not. It's a bit unfortunate that our colleagues across the border perhaps haven't realised just what they could do about friendly fire. But that's another question really to think about. But that's what it came from. It came from the ability to identify that somebody was friendly because it pinged back a signature. And all that RFID is about is making use of radio waves at different frequencies to actually help us identify something, whether that be an object, a person, or anything that we want to actually identify. And that's the key bit, it's about identifying. Not necessarily about authorising, but identifying. The authorisation may be important once one has identified. And certainly, in certain things within the health service, that's one of the key aspects that's being looked at. What's also quite important about this is that most people, when they hear about RFID, think about tags and readers, which are the hardware, the visible component that you see. And the tags come in all different shapes and sizes. And the frequencies can allow you to operate from a very, very small distance of about a centimetre, anything up to 3 kilometres. And just to help you understand that, in Iraq, what happens with the US Army is in their depots, They have a series of containers down the side of the desert, and they have a hummer. And the hummer goes down the lines between the containers, and it finds the container that responds to what it's looking for. Compare that to what we do. We have to go and walk down the line and pick out the piece of paper which might still be there or not there. Right? So there are some really important things about the speed and the accuracy that identification like that gives us, of being able to find the right thing at the right time. It is an enabling technology. It's also a technology that doesn't normally work just on its own. It works with other things. Excuse me. The problem that comes is that the hardware is just a small part of what's actually involved. And it was interesting that Nigel talked about it and placed it as being a disconnect technology. I'd actually argue that case. I'd actually say that it's all three. There is a part of it which is definitely about communication. In that what it basically does is, if you have an active tag, it is continually sending out the message that says, I'm here, all the time. I can even have active passive tags, and what that means is they are dormant until they receive a message, and at that point they become active and they continue broadcast for a period of time. It is also disconnected in exactly the way that was described to you, in that it then does things. But the key is, it produces an awful lot of data, and if you don't process it, it has no meaning. So the key part about RFID is that it has all three parts of those technologies that have to be involved in it. And that means that there are an awful lot of things that go on. Between this hardware layer, we have to be able to translate the bits and bytes of the messages that we get into what's called an RFID middleware software that actually is used to do that. That then gets taken into a whole series of applications. And there are two particular applications at this present moment in time that people are very interested in. One of those is called ePedigree, and for anybody who's been looking at some of the things that have been going on in the US legislation, they'll know that ePedigree in pharmaceuticals, particularly as far as the state of California is concerned, is actually a very, very hot topic, even though at the moment the California state has just put back the legislation for a period of time. But what that's saying is, ePedigree is a way of helping you to authorize that this commodity of a drug is actually what it says it is, and it's not coming from the grey or black market. It's a proof of the identity of manufacture, and the fact that it's not changed throughout a very complicated supply chain that exists within the pharmaceutical industry, which involves a number of third parties which make the whole process very complex. The last one there is another one of these wonderful anachronisms that come in with all of the things that come in with the computing engine of RTLS. It stands for real-time location systems. And what this does is, in fact, it's a combination of a location system, which could be GPS, it could be Wi-Fi, it could be anything that allows us to locate somebody, along with RFID. And the accuracy that they can get with some of this technology can be within 2 centimetres of where the actual object is. You can also go a little bit wider to maybe 2-3 metres. And it depends on how accurate you want to find that. That has real meaning when you're starting to think about locating portable x-ray machines inside hospitals, when you're looking at locating perhaps people in hospitals. Where's the nearest x-ray specialist because I've got an emergency? I need to get hold of him or her fast. Who's the one that's nearest to be able to handle this? Those sorts of things are very important at certain times in the life. So there are a number of components that make up what is this subject of RFID. One of the things that I've been involved in doing at Bloor He's actually trying to define very clearly and precisely what's involved in actually putting together a piece of software that allows you to do the translation and how you can need to control it. This software stack basically shows the sorts of information that you need to control and the sorts of ways that you need to manage it and how it all integrates with what are around already in terms of the systems that exist inside organisations. For those people who want to know more about this, this is the second report which is due to come out from Bloor within the next month or so, and it's around the RFID middleware area, and it basically shows that we actually have a combination of technology that we have to put together. A lot of it already exists, but we need to be able to put it together to actually make a whole, a new whole. I was asked to give some examples of where it's used. And one of the most interesting examples for me personally is to look at health and safety. The first example here is actually a Norwegian shipyard called Aker Yard. And one of their problems that they had was how do they manage to get on maybe 15 ships that are in the dockyard, how do they ensure that if there's a fire or some sort of emergency, how do they ensure that everyone who is on a particular ship gets off it and is away? Well, you could have a teller, I suppose, standing there writing it down. You can imagine how laborious and boring that would be and how accurate it might be. Right? So they have to record every time someone comes onto the ship and off the ship. What they've done is to actually put on all of the gangways that go onto the ships a gateway. And because everyone has to wear a safety helmet, they've put a tag inside the safety helmet. So as people walk through, they don't have to do anything that records that they've entered a particular ship and they've exited when they come off. And that's all it's being used for, is to actually check who's on which ship at what time. Now the interesting piece about this was that the Norwegian unions took this on board and actually agreed to it. Because although it's a monitor of where someone is, it's all about safety of the personnel and ensuring that they can be actually found. There are 5,000 of them on this one yard. That's an awful lot of people to be able to know where they are. And you can't do it without technology to be able to pick that up. I think one of the other examples in here that's well worth looking at is the example of BP. Some of you may know that back in 2005 there was an extremely serious fire at one of their refineries in Texas, in which about 3 people lost their lives. Some of you might not know was that actually they didn't know about 2 of those people. And the other part was that one of them shouldn't ever have been in that area at all. So they had to do some serious thinking about how do they control one, people being able to go into the area, and there are certain circumstances where someone who is not normally in that sort, allowed in that area would need to go in there, but they'd need to be accompanied. And how do they ensure that the people who go into that area are also properly equipped? So they've done 2 things, both of which use RFID. The first is that they use an identity card, which has got an RFID chip in it, which actually records who they are, and also has some basic information about what they're allowed to do. So they have a sort of, you may have seen in some of the government departments, these wonderful sort of Doctor Who back doors, the TARDIS-like doors that you go in, where it opens one side and then it closes behind you and then opens the other. Well, that's what they do to go into the control area. So you first put your card in and that opens up the door if you're allowed in. You go in and it closes behind, but it doesn't open up yet. Above you is another check. And that's recording and checking whether or not you've got the right clothing to go into the area. So it checks that you've got your hard hat on, because there's a tag in the hat. It checks that you might have the right type of suit to go in. It might be flame retardant suits, or it might be something else that you have to have. It also checks whether or not you've got the right boots on as well. So it checks every piece of safety equipment that is appropriate to go into that unsafe area. And only then will it open to let you go into the unsafe area. If you haven't got your clothing, there's a little mark that goes all the way back to the health and safety officer that says someone tried to enter incorrectly. It will also check how many times, whether or not your clothing has actually been verified and checked out, because it has to be obviously verified that there's no tears, rips or dents or whatever. So it will also make sure that you've had the maintenance cycle checked on that as well. This once again has proved incredibly successful as far as the union's concerned. This is a readily accepted thing and is being installed in every single refinery of BP, and in fact every single other danger zone that they have, as a way in which they can control people going in and out, and then helping them in terms of ensuring their safety once they're in an unsafe area. But once again, it's a piece of surveillance. It is a slight invasion of privacy, but it's for a purpose. I'm not going to spend too long on Oyster cards, but there's some interesting pieces of the information I picked up about why people chose it. And I think the classic one is the very top piece is all about fraud. Fraud was in terms of the fact that people either stayed on longer than their ticket actually allowed them to, or went round and round the circle line many times, right, for the same value as if you had gone round three stations or whatever. Those sorts of things were what they were trying to pick up. They also had reached a point where actually the ticket machines in the London Underground had reached expiry time, so they could be changed. So the changing of the over to being able to support that was not necessarily an additional cost. It's a good time to actually make a replacement of that sort of technology. There are all sorts of other things in terms of benefits. I don't know if you've noticed how quick it is and easy it is if you use an Oyster card to go through. It's very rarely that it fails compared with when you use a ticket. So there are all sorts of things about that that made it possible. And yes, there is this bit about if you register, you're then identified. But there are some other things that one might need to bear in mind. And I'll come to talk about that when I come to talk about the Olympics in London. In healthcare, there are probably three key areas that people are looking at. The first of those, and for anyone who's ever had a relative who's had Alzheimer's, they'll understand why this is such a fantastic idea. The idea in here is that you fit to the Alzheimer patient a bracelet. You then allow them in a controlled area to wander so they can actually move about. But you know whenever they are going near a danger point. And a danger point could be a doorway to the outside world. And they can't get through that doorway unless they have the right bracelet which will open the door. So it helps in two things. It helps you find those people when you need to find them, and it also prevents them from going outside into the wide world and therefore making them possibly into danger. That's an extremely useful thing. The interesting piece about that is that's being used far more in America than over here in the UK or Europe. We are behind, way behind, in terms of thinking about that. The health service patients and health science patients in the UK. I don't know if you have an elderly relative who's had an aid call button, but the aid call buttons are also RFID enabled. And basically what they do is when you press the red button, it actually causes a call to be made to a particular call centre, which registers that someone's just had a fall or whatever, is in some sort of problem area. What that then happens is that there is normally a phone which doesn't have to be picked up, and that that call centre can call and try and talk to the people. As my mother used to have one of these before when she was alive, I know the problems that exist with it and also the benefits of it. It's quite interesting to be called out at 2 o'clock in the morning to aid an old lady who's fallen over in her kitchen. It's also extremely difficult when she falls over in the garden and therefore can't talk to anybody. So there are some practical good things to it and there's some bad things in that piece of working, but the overall aspect of this is an aid to people that helps them and makes them feel more independent, which is very useful. The big thing in healthcare has been about how does one prove that the drug you're being dispensed is actually what it says on the label. There are so many examples of people who have been given drugs that are not what they say they are. And there are two ways that you can get that. One is that it can actually be completely and utterly wrong, i.e. it's come from outside and actually does absolutely no benefit to you whatsoever. It might even do damage to you. The second is that it can actually be a drug that's actually generated for sale in the third world and is coming back into this into the Western world market. In which case, of course, the drug companies lose out, but it could also be that the dosages are different, and one has to be careful about those sorts of aspects. There have been a number of initiatives over the last 2-3 years about looking at how one can actually help look at dispensing authentication process, which allow you therefore to think about when a drug is actually dispensed to you, to be able to authenticate whether or not it's actually come from where it says it was manufactured or not. And that's one of the areas that is being looked at, has been looked at, as one of the cases of what ePedigree is about. And it's a look about how do you actually put that into operation. The problem in the pharmaceutical market is the fact that there are a number of different people that are involved. And because of the way legislation puts itself into perspective, you actually have to go through a series of Chinese paper walls, which mean that we've got numbers of different people involved, and the way in which you end up with your particular drug, whatever it is, could mean that it's come from a number of different things and may even have been repackaged at least twice in the whole process. But there are all sorts of ways that one can get around that to look at and trying to ensure that. And the law that's been put forward by California and by a number of the other states in the US really is trying to put that into legislative practice. Once again, Europe is way, way behind and has actually even talked about not using RFID but using 2D barcodes, which means that we have less information available to actually do proper product recalls more effectively, and also be able to have better tracking mechanisms in terms of temperature control or even light control, both of which can affect drugs. So taking a particular backward step of the use of technology is not going to prove effective for you and I as general public in terms of being able to make use of things later. I said I'd come to the Olympics. The Olympics have been RFID enabled since after Los Angeles, when the Americans managed to lose the javelins in time for the javelin contest. So all the athletes turned up, but no javelins, so that was a bit of a problem. So it has been used for tracking the equipment for some time. What's going to happen in Beijing is that you'll start to see it move so that certainly in Beijing all the athletes and what's called the Games family, that's if you like all the athletes' entourage that accompany the athletes nowadays, will all have tags on. So their badge will actually be an RFID tag and will get them in and out of all of their buildings that they have access to. And that will also probably apply to all the staff and also to all the officials that will be involved in the Olympics at that point. By the time it comes to London, the sorts of things that are being talked about is that there will be no actual paper ticket. The only way that you will be able to buy it is if you have something like an Oyster card. And that will be the way in which you'll buy your ticket and the way in which you'll get in and out of the stadium. Because not only will it check that it's you, and it's the right ticket numbers, if you like, and allocation, but it will also check that you've gone to the right venue. And it will also check that because it's going to be timed, that you've not exceeded your time, It will also allow you to add time to it by just going up and buying extra capabilities, etc. And of course, there will be no need for any money kiosks, so therefore it's safer from the point of view of money. So in terms of the fact that there won't need to be any money around for buying the tickets, means that that's less capability in terms of that. It also will help in possibly in coordination between transport systems and end of event, because you'll know how many people have actually gone into a particular event, and therefore how long they're likely to be in that event, and therefore be able to schedule transport to arrive when that event ends, so that they can actually have all the transport available at the time they go. Therefore avoiding large numbers of queues, etc., by actually trying to move things around quicker. But there are all sorts of things that could go on in that. I've had discussions with Newham Council at various times and talking about things like what might you do in terms of ensuring that in the facilities, let's say in the swimming pool, all the equipment that needs to be checked has got an RFID tag on it, so you know when someone's actually checked it. So you can validate maintenance. You can actually ensure that the person has actually been there, seen it, done the job and walked away. You can also look at the fact of how do you actually verify that people can get are going into the right building. So maybe the things that we will need, particularly if we start to look at moving people from hospital to home for aftercare, then we actually will start to have to think about electronic door locks. And maybe RFID is the way that we can use that to verify who can come into a building and out of a building without actually having to worry. So that they can have a card which verifies that they're the district nurse, and the district nurse is expected between this time and this time during the day. And if they come at a different time, well, it will maybe cause a call to be made so that you can verify if that person is needed in or not. But there are all sorts of things, therefore, that we are likely to see in 2012 in terms of the way in which the Olympics will be run and the use in which RFID will be made during that. This is a little video that was made in the US for a supermarket called Target. This is a young lady who's arriving with her shopping list on her phone. It's giving her a welcome. It recognises her as a past customer at some point. What it's now doing is taking every single item that was on her shopping list and matching that to the aisles. It then puts that aisle diagram onto her phone and also shows her the best route to go round the store. It also picks up the fact that she's bought certain products before and highlights the fact that there's a discount on some of them. This gentleman here is a store manager, and he's just seen that it's a commodity that's not moving very fast, so he's changing the price. There's no need to stick labels on products. What happens now, as you'll see, is all the price tags, they're on the front of the thing and they will change. This gentleman here, Toby, is in fact a stacker. And he's going on to stack up some shelves. You'll notice that he's wearing on his belt what looks like a mobile phone. And you'll notice it's just buzzed him and it's got a message that tells him that there's one particular thing that's gone temporarily out of stock. So he's gone away into the back of the store and he finds the commodity, unpacks it from the wrapped boxes that it's in, picks it up. Now, of course, that will never happen. The lady has now left the store, and you'll notice behind her there were some gates. She's not had to pay anything at all. As she's gone out the door, it's Barrett asked her whether or not she wanted to pay in her usual method. Because her phone is attached to her credit card, that has now gone to her bill. If you go to Germany, and you go into a metro store in Germany, some of that's already in operation. Let me ask a question. How many of you thought that was like perhaps a bit of Big Brother watching you? how many of you felt that actually that was convenient?
Mixed.
That's probably the right thing. If it's overdone, then you feel a bit... But think about the fact that you've never been to that store before, but you are a recognised, in that case, target customer from outside. You've never been to that store before. The joy of actually knowing where to find things in the aisles, just think about the time it saves you. Knowing where the discounts are, because you might be interested in those. That's the cross-sell, up-sell going on. So there are some benefits out there. So what are the real issues that one's faced with? Well, the first thing really is that we're not dealing with something that's new. We're just using something that's been around for a long time in some slightly different ways. For the last 30, 35 years, the manufacturing industry has been using RFID to track parts on the production line. Very successfully. What we're now starting to see is that move from being inside one building to being outside, across buildings, across organisations. And that's the big change. And we're starting to see it come down to you and I as customers. Now, if you go into people like Marks and Spencer's, or you, certainly at the moment, and you buy a suit, you'll find that that has an RFID label on it. It's used by Marks and Spencer's to help them track the goods and also to do a stock take. I can tell you that the stock take used to take a day in the Oxford Street store. It now takes 1 hour. Just think about the cost saving and the amount of time that's going on, and all the people that are involved can now be focused more on you and I as customers. Right? What we have to think about, though, is because of some things that have happened in the US, we now have a little message that says this thing has a tag in it. If you don't want the tag in, we'll take it off for you. Right? If you buy an HP product, you will find that all HP products or HP printers have got an RFID tag on the box. And there should be a little thing that this box has got an RFID tag on. If you wish to remove it, cut the thing out. The fact is, no one can read it. Once it's left the store, no one can read that tag. Not unless they actually come up about as close as I am now to you and start reading it. And then if you have the right device that has the right frequency to actually pick that up, and they can comprehend what the data is that's actually on the tag. So the story is about people going down the road and being able to find out what toothpaste you've got are ludicrous. It will not happen. It's not worth it. They can already steal that from the store card. Is there a threat? Well, the only time it really becomes a threat is when, if you like, one can start to associate data. And at that point, because the association can, if you like, as Nigel talked about, create a sort of profile which might not be accurate, it might not be actually true, that association. There are little issues and problems that can go around that, and we should be aware of people doing that. This piece that was the real big thing in the US about the fact that people could read things in your home is a nonsense. The only time that that's likely to happen is actually going to be a benefit to you and me. Hands up, how many of you here have had to wait for a washing machine engineer to come out? Right? And what's the betting? He comes out and he takes the machine apart and he then says, "I'm sorry, I'll have to go back to the depot to get the part."
Yeah.
And you're left there, and it's not one day, you've got to be there the next day. So if I put an RFID tag on my washing on the washing machine when it was manufactured, and that tag actually picked up all the from all the control mechanisms that exist inside the washing machine, so they actually could diagnose where the likely faults have occurred, and you then are able to plug, if you wanted to, you agree to a platinum service which allowed the company that provided the service to dial into your washing machine when you had a fault, right? They would actually be able to diagnose what's right, and there would the engineer come down with all the right parts and service and therefore done, and it's one day. Done and dusted. Now that's, if you like, when we pay and we agree for us to be that, to open the door for people because we want that service. So we have to think about how we use that. There are lots and lots of benefits from using the technology that actually make our life easier. And that's a key thing, because most of us want to make our life easier. Unfortunately, if you haven't replied to the EU request for information to change on their proposals for RFID, you could end up losing a lot of the benefits that you've already got, that you're using now. Because the proposed EU legislation on the use of RFID is a backtrack, both on how it's being used currently in parts of Germany and also how it's being used in the UK and in the Netherlands. Not to say how it's being used in all the Nordic countries as well. So the key is we have to get the balance right between our invasion of privacy, the sorts of things that Nigel was talking about, with this ready availability of the information that we want to make available when we need to make it available, with the way in which we want to live our life. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed. Well, the